Hello, and thank you for listening to my oral history interview. For this interview, I decided to talk with my dad. My dad grew up in Southern California and spent a fair share of his early life in and out of jails. For this interview, we were originally going to go over his interactions with the LA riots in the 90s, but after talking with him more, the memories proved to be too upsetting to discuss. Instead, I've selected a few clips that illustrate the experience of a young man whose childhood revolved around group homes, juvenile, and even police brutality. In a rather candid way, my father describes who he was as a child, a description that, to me, seems completely at odds with who he is today. Before we begin, I would like to apologize for my dog, who you will inevitably hear in the background. Here we go.
So, the youngest of nine kids, raised in a very conservative household. When I was born, there was actually two missionaries staying in the third story of our house. So there was 13 of us in the house. So when mom made dinner, it was with a big pot. had a lot of free will to do whatever I wanted. I think because being the youngest, my mom was just kind of gave up on trying to enforce the rules. So I was pretty spoiled.
Spoiled?
Yeah. Yeah, I got to do whatever I wanted. The youngest of nine, I was the last. So yeah. And then when I turned about 13 is when I started my rebellion phase, we'll just call it that. And I quit going to church. It's not like they just let me quit going to church.
Right.
It was, you know, I was in and out of juvenile hall and, you know.
Yeah.
They made me go to church one time when I had just gotten out of jail. And somebody came up to me and goes, "Hey, Ron, where you been?" And I was like, "Juvenile hall." And they were just like, "All right, well, good seeing you."
How old were you?
That kind of stopped the question.
Yeah.
I was 13.
13. Did any of your other siblings like go to jail around that time, juvenile hall, or were you the rebel of the family at the time?
I was the rebel at the time. Mm-hmm. Facility in Byron, California called Byron's Boys Ranch. And that's where I spent a lot of time as a juvenile. So I actually remember the last time I got arrested as a juvenile, they showed me my chart because it was like a big manila folder, and they opened it up and there was a block in the middle of the folder that had 12 spaces, and they put every time I was arrested in that space, and they're like, "Look, we ran out of space. We don't even..." It's only made for 12 times. This is your 13th time. And I was like, "Is it lucky?" But so when I was 15, I was at Byers Boys Ranch. And they said, "Anybody who wants to take your GED, go stand in line." So I went and stood in line. And I went down. I went to the classes. They helped me prepare. I took the tests. And then... I found out you're supposed to be 16 to pass your GED, but I'd already taken it. And so once I turned 16, they just kind of gave me my diploma.
Did they? Wow.
Yeah. They were like, "Well, do you want to pay an extra $13 for a diploma? You'll get an actual paper one." And I'm like, "No, I mean, what am I going to do with it?" Yeah. So when I got out of Byron's Boys Ranch, I was still on probation.
Mm-hmm.
Part of probation is you have to go to school unless you have your GED. So now I didn't have to worry about getting in trouble for skipping school and all that stuff.
And I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
About that time,
because when I got out I was 16. And so I was more comfortable working than in school.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, let's talk now a little bit more about your experience in like juvenile hall and stuff like that. Can you tell me about the first time you were arrested?
Yeah. So, a friend borrowed my BB gun and he was going to go on vacation. He wasn't like a close friend, but he was a friend. And I said, you need to give me that gun back before you go. And he didn't. He went on vacation. And so me and my best friend at the time, Ricky, broke into his house, took the gun back, and also took a big old bottle of wine. And so we went to his house, got drunk, and started telling all of our friends what we did. And they were friends with him. So they called the cops. The cops came and arrested me that night, and I was 13.
What happened? What happens when you're arrested as a juvenile?
So, it's funny you ask, because now that I know more about the court system, I would have done it a lot differently. Mm-hmm. They brought me in the room and interrogated me, and it was scary. You know, they locked me in a jail cell where there was adults right next to me, and it was terrifying.
So there was no barrier between you?
I was in a separate wall. It was a separate cell, but I could see them, mm-hmm. and they could see me, and it was just scary. Like, you know, because in my head, it's like, are they going to put us together? And what, you know, it's like, so I was really scared. And then just going in, because you go into this cement room that's just full of graffiti on the wall with blood splatters all over, spit everywhere, boogers everywhere, mm-hmm. and it's the grossest thing you've ever walked into. And that's where you have to stay, in that little disgusting closet. And it was just, I'd never seen anything as gross. Like, I can picture it today. I was just like, I can't believe that people stay in this room. Like, this is just creepy. And then they interrogated me and had me, you know, I confessed. Mm-hmm. And so they took me to juvenile hall, and I was there for like a couple days, and then they let me out on probation.
Wow. Of the 13, do you call them juvenile arrests?
Yeah.
Were your crimes always the same, or did you have a pretty diverse portfolio?
Well, so the first one was burglary. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, in my head, it's like, I just took my BB gun and a bottle of wine. Well, that's burglary. Yeah, it's a felony. You're on probation. And then once I was on probation, I can't remember how much they assigned me to the first time. Let's say a year of probation. Every time you cut school or get caught smoking weed or something like that, mm-hmm. you violated probation, you go back to jail. So most of my arrests were for cutting school and smoking weed.
Wow, really?
Yeah, probably 8 of them, 8 or 9. There was one other time where there was a burglary. It was an actual burglary. It was legit. Uh-huh. Actually, it was just such a horrible situation because I was doing meth. Mm-hmm. And I was dating this girl, and she was house sitting. And so she's like, hey, I'm house sitting for this guy. And I'm like, well, sweet, let's have a party. So we had a party, and I'm in the island in the kitchen. I open the drawer, and there's a Crown Royal bag full of jewelry. I was like, what? Like, this can't be real. And I'm looking at it. I'm talking rings, bracelets, necklaces. Like, it was full. And I'm like, it's stamped gold, silver. I'm like, this is crazy. So I took it. And then, I didn't tell anybody, like, uh-huh. the other people that were there, but eventually the parent, you know, it came out, yeah. because all of a sudden I had a bunch of money. I told my friend, and he told everyone, you know.
Oh, I love that it was a Crown Royal bag too. That's so on the nose.
And then once I got arrested for petty theft, I was really hungry, mm-hmm. and I went into Food for Less and stole some peanuts.
Wow.
No, when I turned an adult, I mean, I still got into trouble and stuff, but I didn't get into sketchy situations as much. Mm-hmm. I still did though, but I just, you know, I was a little bit more wise, definitely more street smart. Uh-huh. And so I knew where to go and what to say and how to act to where I wouldn't get attacked.
Uh-huh. Do you think police brutality is a real thing?
I've experienced it. Yeah. So I can tell you that it is.
Tell me about.
I can tell you that there's been a couple times where I've been arrested and it's like I'm yelling and saying things to the cops. Mm-hmm. And then when they go to walk me to the car, mm-hmm. they just twist my wrist as hard as they can to where, you know.
You're in pain.
Severe pain.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, I'm not doing it. You know, I'm just walking you to your car. Mm-hmm. As an adult, I got arrested and was in L.A. County Jail. And there was probably 30, 40 people in a cell. And we had to stay in there for like 2-3 hours. And we weren't supposed to smoke because mm-hmm. you could smoke in the jail. But there was like 4 or 5 people that lit up. So I lit one up. Mm-hmm. And then the guards came and they're like, oh, somebody's been smoking. Who was it? We're not going to let you guys out till you tell me or whatever. And this big old Mexican standing right next to me, he goes, come on, fool. Just tell him it was you. And the guard's looking at him say that to me. And now everyone's staring at me. So I'm like, yeah, it was me, whatever. So everybody goes out of the room. He takes all of my stuff, which is basically hygiene. You know, mm-hmm. I got deodorant, toothpaste, whatever. Squeezes it all out into the toilet. Oh, we need to look for contraband. I want to see if you're hiding anything, whatever. Makes me take off all of my clothes. So I'm butt naked, hands against the wall. And the cop is standing behind me screaming at me. And I can feel his spittle on my neck. Like he's on me. Like very uncomfortably on me when mm-hmm. I'm naked. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I could F you up right now. And who's going to believe you, huh? Who's going to believe you, huh? And like, he just kept saying this stuff. And I was clenched. Like I was ready to take my beating. And it never happened. Uh-huh. But it was pretty close. And it was very scary. So we're walking in a hallway, LA County Jail. And you have to have your shoulder to the wall. Mm-hmm. Sliding on the wall as you're walking. If your shoulder comes off, big trouble. Well, there's a row of guys walking the other way. And there was a guy that I recognized. And so when he passed, I kind of nodded my head and looked at him. And then I looked a little bit farther and there was a cop right there. And he goes, you looking at me, boy? You looking at me? I'm like, no, sir. And I kept, so he grabs me out of line, walks me down the hallway, opens up a door to hide us from the camera. So now we're behind the door. He's got his hand on my neck and he's like, you know, he's ready to attack me. It's like, and I didn't do anything except say, what's up? I didn't even verbally say anything. I nodded my head to somebody who was walking the opposite direction. And so, yeah, those are my experiences, but I can tell you in LA County, when you're sitting there, when you're going to be there for a while, they send you to a camp or whatever that's by Magic Mountain. Mm-hmm. I watched people just get the snot beat out of them for no reason. So I forget what they were called, the cops that came at night, but they'd all be wearing full beetle, we called it beetle gear, because they got mm-hmm. the helmet, full pads, and they would... They would all stomp together when they walked. And when you heard that coming, it was like, they would tell you, put your face in your pillow. If I see your eyeball, you're done. And so you had to put your face literally in your pillow so that they did not see one eyeball. And they grabbed this guy, yanked him out of his bed, took him outside, and beat him for about 10 minutes while he was begging for his life. And I got to hear the whole thing.
While my father points out that these are just his own experiences, what he is actually describing are memories that are mnemonic communities, and his experiences are often shared collectively by other inmates. Thank you for listening to my interview today.